sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Come, Master, tell Tommy, come on down. You're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in North Central Indiana. Right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite drink to eat, the first thing you drink. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, Insurgent, this plain old box holder. The old Tommy O'Kiss.
Well, here we go, boys and girls. I'm in the bunker right down here below the enormous amount of dirt and surrounded by concrete. I'm ready for the big one to go down, baby. I'm ready. I can live very comfortably in my bunker. It's not the greatest thing to look at, I'll tell you. It could use some improvement, but as far as the main thing, it's here and ready for the big one. It is January the 13th, 2016. Yeah, got that right, yeah. Oh, wow, I missed an appointment yesterday. My friend across the street is applying for a variance to put a warehouse on his property, and I figured he'd have some problems, so I was going to go down there and testify for him if he needed it. But as usual, when my main squeeze isn't around, I lose all track of time and dates and everything else. So I missed it. But I'm pretty sure he did okay. Somebody sent me a beautiful calendar. Really well done with a lot of great art and everything else. Much better than we ever did. However, we did put it out for several years. And it's got about everybody that there is in here, except one person's missing, and that was Ben Klassen. I had to pin that in, and I think this is all dedicated to the birthdays of dead martyrs, dead heroes, and so forth, primarily to the right wing. However, there's some in there that's left, primarily Christians, but whoever put it together didn't realize that there were quite a number of these heroes that were not Christians. Revlo P. Oliver, you wouldn't want to call him a Christian. And there's a lot of them in there, but that's okay. We never let that affect us when we put our calendar together. And I've got my picture in there, but with Bob Miles from Choctaw, Michigan. Got a picture of him and me. So I snuck in there and I'm not dead yet. And I might not get in there after I'm dead because there's a lot of opposition over there in the right wing. Speaking of the right wing, they use it very loosely. And I go around listening to all these talk shows, at least a little bit. And normally, I listen a lot more to the left wing than the right wing. And lately I've been tuning into this Breitbart once in a while. And the guy who founded that, Breitbart, who's dead, he died at a very young age. They play a recording on there all the time. They call me a racist. I'm nowhere near a racist. I absolutely oppose racism. I hate racism, blah, blah, blah. And that's sort of the general theme of this radio show. And the guys who are in the racists who are in the right wing tend to tune these stations in more. Because that's the only thing they've got. They hope to hear a little hint of racism, which they rarely get. And they've got these people trained now to say, oh, me? I'm not a racist. Oh, I'm not a racist. Not me, not me, not me, never me. Yeah. Subconsciously, they're all racist. And the guys I can't stand the most are the racists on the right wing. A lot of stuff the left wing does, you know they're going to do it. And the progressives, you know what they're going to say. And they're right out in the open with it. Most of them hate our guts. That's because we let them take over the left wing of the racial struggle. And we should have kept the left wing and said to hell with the right wing, because the right wing always ends up in the pocket of the rich. And they'll claim, no, 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 we're libertarians or this or that, but they're in the pocket of the rich. I was doing a little more research on Donald Trump. And we definitely, if we're serious about voting for somebody, we wouldn't want to vote for Donald Trump. He born and raised in Brooklyn. You can't be born and raised in Brooklyn in business and survive and not be in bed with the Jews. You just can't do it. I was looking at his family tree. Now, his mother's supposedly from Scotland, but she looks a little suspect to me. Well, you can be a Jew from Scotland. There's Jews from Ireland, Jews from all over the place. So just because somebody says they're from Scotland doesn't mean they're not Jewish. But anyhow, I was reading the history of his business practices and all that. This guy, his business practices would gag a maggot, especially related to the white working class. He's no more in the arena with the white working class than the man in the moon. And he's playing them like a violin, and they're going for it. And we're all tempted to go for it a little bit. But you got to understand what somebody really is and not what they say they are, what you hope they are. Now, number one, you know that even if he was serious, he's not going to be able to accomplish in his first term all the crap he talks about. He's not going to put a wall up. You got to understand that all this stuff can be blocked by federal courts. The federal courts are the muscle of the system and the ruling class. And they can stop anything. And so they can even cause the military to come out and stop it. So most of the stuff that Donald Trump has got everybody all excited about reminds me of that quotation in the Bible, they tickle your ears. That's what Donald Trump is doing. He's tickling the people's ears. Now the rest of them are rats too. So I'm not saying they're not. That's why I'm not voting, and you shouldn't vote. Because voting for any of these slugs is a vote against the survival of your race. Pure and simple. They will sell out everything to keep their power and their money and so forth. Even when they know the white race is in trouble and the leadership is not doing what they should, they're still going to go that route. And so we can't have anything to do with them except destroy them any way we can. And if anybody else is trying to destroy them, well, sort of give them a boost too. As far as I'm concerned, we can't survive this right-wing conservative crap. I'm a racist. I'm a racial, white racial separatist. That's it. You know, I go along more mostly with Ben Klassen and his Nature's Eternal Religion because it's the only thing that's straight out white racist and doesn't make apologies for it. It's too bad it's not more popular because it should be the religion or the movement or the political struggle of our race. Or you don't have to join up with anybody, but you can have Nature's Eternal Religion in your heart, in your brain. You can have the white man's Bible in your brain, and you should, and might is right, and all that kind of stuff. But if you're still playing around with these, you know, if you want to find out about somebody like David Duke, well, he's supporting Donald Trump. Yeah, he is. And that's the way he is. He wants the power and the money, and he's pissed off because he don't get it. But that's what he wants. David Duke and Donald Trump are a lot alike. Duke's more out in the open about the racism, but I sometimes question very seriously how deep down racial he is. You know, you could say a lot of things, and you can even write books about it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that way down deep, that's what you are. Well, Duke's got the same access to the same information on Donald Trump that I do and you do, but yet he's inclined, he may hedge his bets a little, but no, he's out there. He's using Donald Trump, too, to get publicity again, get back in the news. So I see it on coming up on the internet quite a bit, David Duke and linking him to Donald Trump. Well, the other side, or whatever side, race mixer side, they like that because they can use David Duke to smear Donald Trump. Well, there's enough out there to smear him. You don't need David Duke to smear him. So anyhow, I see these right-wingers all over there trying to get Donald Trump to be more racist. He's not racist. Well, he's racist for the rich. Yeah, a billionaire can be very racist, and he can hide behind his money and take positions that are safe. He can even toy around with racism if you got enough money. Well, thanks to some of our Eastern people, and I don't mean Eastern United States, we're going to be launching some more storage places up on the internet for our past television shows and all kinds of video that I've got. We've already got quite a bit up there on Race and Reason, Tom Etzker Race and Reason on YouTube. But we've got a new place to launch our stuff, and we're going to put everything but the kitchen sink up there. It's going to take us a while to do it, but like I say, thanks to our friends from the Eastern part of the world, that's what we're going to do. You people should all have a copy of this Might is Right, The Survival of the Fittest book. And I found that you can get them for about $10 from Abe Books, A-B-E Books. Whenever I'm looking for a book, I go to Abe Books because you can get them a lot cheaper there. Amazon will charge you $20 for, you can get for $10 from Abe Books if they've got them. And they have access to other sources all over the country and all over the world. So remember that when you're looking for a book. I noticed there that Dennis Mahan ordered a book for $20. And that book from Abe Books was $10. So I told him, Don't buy any more books from Amazon and those, unless you can't get it anyplace else. Well, let's go back to Might is Right for a while this morning. I'm just picking chapters just sort of like willy-nilly here. Among our Norse and Germanic forefathers, it was considered the saddest disgrace that could befall any matron to be the mother of a weakling or a laggard in war. only for the debased influence of priestcraft that would be felt by modern women of all grades. Roman matrons have died of broken hearts and even drowned themselves in shame at the poltroonery displayed by a son. If past generations had to depend on the sweet, girly, girly, fragile young thing of today, or the lean lady graduate for its reproductive ova, we would long ago have become a swarm of ring-tailed baboons. Poor things, they also feel our artificiality, feel it in their hearts when they look upon the spindly, shanked, mutilated males, scarecrows of men that are expected to love, honor, and obey. Over-intellectualism, bad enough in a man, transfigures a woman into a freak. The more animal nature a maiden possesses, the more of a true woman she is, the better wife and mother she will make. Culture and refinement are horrible substitutes for the grand old matronly virtues of beauty, naturalness, purity, maidenly hypnotism. Intellectualism renders more sensitive. Sensitive persons are very excitable, timid, and liable to disease. Overcultivation of the brain cells undoubtedly produces in both sexes physical decay and leads on towards insanity. Women's noblest occupation is not merely to read erotic novels, pound the fiddle, waltz divinely, or fry steak and onions, but to breed men, to raise up to a race of unsusceptible fighters, fighters for their own hand. Her vilest occupation is to duplicate anemic poltroons, creeping Judases, laborious jackasses. Therefore, if she desires her sons to be brave, bold, and successful in the battle of life, she should see to it that her husband is not a coward or a slave. And men ought to also beware of marrying slave-minded women. This point I simply set forth in the saga of Olaf Tryggvason. Earl Rogwald had a degenerate son who returned from a Viking cruise without bringing any plunder. This was considered a shameful disgrace by the family. Earl Rogwald remarked, quote, "My son is not like my forefathers," unquote. So he fitted the young man out afresh, saying to him, quote, "I shall be pleased if you come not again, but I have little hope that you will ever be an honor to your kinsmen, for your mother's family are all thrall-born." Have moderns ever improved on that thought? There is nothing particularly inviting about barren, dyspeptic, blue stocking, new women in pants and spectacles, talking idiotic snuffle through their noses with busts made of adjustable Indian rubber, with narrow or padded hips and wheels between their legs, scorched across the curbstones like mad. When such women are captured, what good are they? They won't even breed, or if they do so, by accident, their puny embryos have to be delicately nurtured into life in steam-heated incubator mechanisms and afterwards fed and weaned on the bottle. The sons of such women, bottle-fed abortions, of what good are they? It is women of this kind of unnatural monsters they are that cause so much domestic unhappiness. They have been educated along false lines, filled with bookish artificialism, and therefore, when called upon to take their maternity duty, they are organic incapables. Hence the divorce court scandals, the fruit of wholesale degeneracy, encouraged by the state, interference with domestic affairs. Quote, "Our times in sin prolific first, the marriage bed with taint have cursed, and family and home, this is the fountainhead of all, the sorrows of the ills that fall on Romans and on Roman." Gradually the curse of law invades the privacy of every home. It encourages emotional feminines to defy their husbands and deify an irresponsible authority. In other words, it deliberately promotes unfaithfulness and unlimited free love. It undermines the husband's control, but at what a dreadful cost. With the equalization of women comes the wholesale panmixia, scientific concubinage, state-regulated polyandry, and the poisoning of all interfamily intercourse. When average women find in statute law a deliverer and a champion more powerful than their husbands and brothers, they become both unfaithful and profligate, especially if well educated. Then it cometh to pass, as in all ages of connubial decadence, no man knoweth his own father. Is not that the practical tendency of the times? Again, is that the tendency itself, not the horrible result of state paternalism, of majority box dictation, of statecraft and priestcraft? The church lives by the functional emotionalism of women. Thus the individual wanes and the state grows more and more powerful. In natural society, every woman's husband is to her both priest and king. When the baleful shadow of politics and preacherisms loom over the marriage bed, dreadful days are at hand. Purity of blood has played and is yet to play a leading role in the drama of racial evolution. Races held in bondage are necessarily mongrelized, degraded, equalized. Homelessness is one result of bad breeding. When a higher type allies itself by marriage with a lower, it paves the way for its own ultimate degeneracy. When Spartans and Athenians mix themselves with imported Asiatic and Egyptian slaves, their downfall was foretold. And when equality becomes the motto of the Christian Italy, Latins, Asiatics, and Negroes, miscegenated, evolving the modern Dago, who slaves for the descendants of the men his ancestors conquered, what a fall! Modern Greeks and Italians, with their dark complexions, curly hair, and sensual lips, show distinct traces of the Negro and Asiatic blood. That, with the emancipation of the Servi, was poured into the forefathers' veins. Hence their conquest by Goth, Manol, Teuton, Turk, and Slav. A friend of Winniewood Reed's tells a tale full of meaning. As an African explorer, he once came across a native tribe, the Jolofs. Remarkable for their comparatively fine appearance, he asked one of them, "How is it that everyone whom I meet here is good-looking? No, until your men, but your women." Quote, "That is easily explained," was the reply. "It has always been our custom to pick out our worst-looking ones and sell them for slaves." Hybridism, south of the Mason-Dixon line, smoothed the way for the Lincoln invasion of 62, and even in the northern states. If the present olipodria intermixture with inferior breeds is not somehow put to an end, similar invasions may be confidently predicted. Our race cannot hope to maintain its predominance if it goes on diluting its blood with Chinamen, Negroes, Japanese, and debased Europeans. Pax panmixia means both death and slavery. Throughout the South and Central America, human mongrelization is rampant. A half-breed is president of Mexico. The Latin race is hopelessly effete in both the Old World and the New. Nations like horses are bred to win. Can you reverse the rules that stupid farmers heed, and men the higher by the coarser breed? Tremendous indeed is the occult influence of the sex love upon the evolution of organic life. Love and glory, fidelity, emulation, resolution, beauty, strength, and courage are directly inspired by sex passions. in the ballad and the legend, they are ever inextricably intertwined. None but the bravest deserve the fair. Faint heart never won a fair lady, and all is fair in love and war, are age-worn proverbs. Nature is saturated through and through with the chemic potency of strife and sexualism. All the world is male and female. The saint is only the hermaphrodite. Sexual desire inspires the male with nobility of bearing, and a female with instincts of motherhood and devotedness and song. The roar of the lion as he tosses his tawny mane for the foremost waterhole, the neigh of high-mettled stallion as he rears at the halter or leaps at the slip rail, the deep challenging bellow of the shaggy bull as he tears up the grass with his stamping hoofs, the nightingale pouring piercingly into the azure vault its magical thrill, man decked in his shining regimentals, marching forth to victory or death with the drumbeat of a bugle song, all bear the direct testimony to the sublime, beneficent, and all-pervading mesmerism of force. Military renown is now and ever has been the virtue of the mightiest animals. Self-abnegation is the thesis of the slave. Christlingism is functional derangement of the nerve centers, and madness, a disease. A rational redeemer has never yet been known to materialize in the guise of a feeble mendicant, a humble petitioner, but rather in the form of a mighty man-hunter, a destroyer of tribal ravages, a man who saith to his disciples, "Come on, not go forth." The emancipator is heard of at first with a secret delight and some misgivings, but afterwards, when better understood, he comes on a war horse with steel by his side, amid the roll of saluting cannon, the throb of triumphal drums, the fierce blare of twisted bugles, and the ringing huzzas of the people he has enriched by exploitation of their foes. For all the world loves a fighter, especially its sisters, its cousins, and its aunts. Liberators never arrive from circumcised Jewry, wearing halos, briar crowns, uttering shrieks of agonized despair, nor do they ride on a colt, the foal of an ass, through the streets of Zion. No, no, that is the ideal of dastards and dotards. In spite of all the century-old emasculated creeds and debasing copybooks commercialisms, the inbred popular conception of a mighty man is still a sworded warrior, a king of men, a ruthless sweeper away of blackmailers, usurers, priests, and usurpers. Who shall be nearest, noble, and dearest, named with all honor and pride evermore? He is the undaunted, whose banner is planted on power's high ramparts and battlements hoar, fearless of danger, to falsehood a stranger, looking not back when there is danger before. He shall be nearest, he shall be dearest, he shall be first in our hearts evermore. A Virginian love song expresses this grand old sentiment in a sexual form. Quote, "Rather would I view thee dying on the last red field of strife, mid thy country's heroes dying, than become a dastard's wife." John Ruskin, in an oft-quoted passage, decidedly caught a passing glimpse of the surging logic that lurks in armed conflicts. War is the foundation of all the high virtues and faculties of men. It is very strange for me to discover this, but I saw it to be quite an undeniable fact. The common notion that peace and virtue of civil life flourish together I found to be wholly untenable. Peace and the vices of civil strife flourish together. Decadence and peace are concentric. Well, that's enough for today, but that's interesting, which is a little different than some of the things that I talk about, but I think he's got a point there. White people claim not to be racist all the time, but they it's hard for them to hide it, and nobody sees through it easier than black people. I got a comedy skit here I'm going to play for you and see if you don't recognize the white Republican upper middle class in this comedy.
And they don't want to give black people credit. They don't want to give us any credit. They just want to blame everything on niggas. Didn't some white man in Boston shoot his pregnant wife and then shot himself to my, oh, niggas did it. Always trying to blame some niggas. And they believe the shit. Till the brother couldn't take it or something, and he could jumped off a fucking bridge, right? Then they told. Then I bet, always trying to blame a goddamn nigga. That's why I'm gonna start a new ad. 900 blame a nigga. So when white folks get in trouble, my agency. Blame a nigga. I just pushed my mother down the stairs. I don't want to go to jail. And a nigga over here. All right, I got one on parole. I'll send right over for him. Hello, blame a nigga. I just ran my car to treat my whole family dead. I don't want to be blamed. Get a nigga. Here we got one here with a bad driving record. I'm going to send him right over. Oh, thank you. Thank you. God bless you, blame a nigga. Thank God the Titanic only had white folks. Because you know they let niggas in. Blame the nigga. You know that. All the white survivors. It wasn't that white iceberg. It was niggers. I heard them singing while we were sinking. I heard them. Old man river, that old. You know, they will let white folks make a movie about any goddamn thing. Look at Hollywood. Scissorhands, give me a fucking break. Somebody is on crack. Somebody's smoking a pipe at the studio. Somebody at the studio is smoking crack. Scissorhands, throw mama from the train. Only white folks can throw their mama from a damn train, and it's a hit fucking movie. Ain't that some crazy shit? Throw mama from the goddamn... What's the other thing? White men can't jump. They don't have to. They own the team. Some white man is at bank right now. Ooh, my niggas are jumping. Oh, jump, nigga. White daddy make you jump. Jump. Oh, jump. Single white female. They'll let white folks make a movie about any fucking thing. But I knew they were crazy when they let them make Driving Miss Daisy. In the 90s, Driving Miss Daisy. Fuck Miss Daisy. I will walk before I drive some goddamn Miss Daisy. Some old Jewish woman, I'll take a bagel and beat the shit out of Miss Daisy. This is the 90s. I'll drive that bitch to an alley and rob her. I will do a carjack. Miss Daisy be on the fucking bus. She fuck with me. See, a lot of you are relating, but a lot of white folks are not laughing. They're holding back because they love that tar baby, Aunt Jemima, let's go back bullshit. Oh, me dating, I love it. Fuck that. I don't like that cooning, happy slave bullshit. See, you're white. You can go back. Back to the Future. They like all that shit. You can skip on back. Your little ass is white. I go back. I can only go back so far. Then my black ass is in chains. Fuck you. I'm not going back. Trying to trick a nigga back. Trying to trick a nigga back. Come on, nigga. Come on back. Come back to Jamaica. Come on. No, I'm going to stay here in the 90s where I can tell you to kiss my black ass. I didn't like the ending of that movie. In the rest home, he's feeding it. Oh, you my best friend. I said, look, poison this bitch so I can go home and get some sleep. What they going to do? Let Spike Lee write and direct part 2? Driving Miss Daisy some more?
That's Paul Mooney. And I respect that black guy. He tells a hell of a lot of truth about the white race, that the part of the white race that pisses me off and makes me sick. I used to talk to him once in a while on the telephone. He wanted to do a, he talked about doing a situation comedy on television. He said, would I go with him and do it? And I said, hell yes, I'll do it. But the Jews stopped that. Anytime that I got close to Hollywood, the Jews killed it. But you give me a white or a black nationalist, a goddamn hate white people black nationalist, and I got a lot more respect for him than I do these candy-ass Uncle Tom bastards that are just as bad as the Uncle Tom whites. Reminds me of Mark Ohana, who was the head of the JDL, and then he went in 71, he went over to Israel. And all he did was, he was a hard-ass Jew that wanted to fight. And they gave him all kinds of trouble. They did everything. You got to read about what they did to Mark Ohana. Now, here's a Jew that wanted to fight the so-called enemies of the Jews, and the people he had to fight the most were Jews, these lily-livered Jews. And they ended up killing him, and they ended up assassinating his son, and they probably assassinated Irv Rubin, who I had plenty of experience fighting him in the street. But on the other hand, I had some respect for a man who will fight, a man who will stand up and say what he thinks and take on anybody. But do you ever notice the worst enemies of people like that are of their own people? You know, the people that I've had trouble with all through my career, so-called career, mainly white people, even in the streets. It was mainly white people. So anyhow, that tells you what has to happen to these white people. They have to be educated. And I'm not powerful enough to educate them. But Mother Nature is. And Mother Nature is going to kick their ass. And I'm all for it. I'm on the sidelines cheering them on. Your house is floating away because you go for global warming or whatever, and you destroy the ecology or the environment, and your house flows away, and you float down the river. Fuck you. You deserve it. You have no respect for nature and the environment or your race or anything else. Just making money. Just that's all you give a shit about, is making money and having power and living a soft life. So you deserve what you get. You deserve what you get. Now comes along a guy that has done business with the Jews all his life, was raised around Jews and business and everything, and he said, he tickles your ears with a few things that make you happy, and you go gaga. Donald Trump, he's our hero now. He's our hero. Shit. People don't even check into the background of these guys. All they have to say is one little thing that sounds a little racial. Oh, boy, that's a great guy. But when the real people come along with the racial speeches and so forth, they don't want to listen to them at all. I mean, I used to be invited to universities to lecture, high schools to lecture, all that kind of stuff. You know, on TV, everything like that. That don't happen anymore. No, white people don't want to hear that. They want to hear these babbling niggers on TV with nigger divorce court and all that stuff. That's what they want to hear. That's their racism, because they can look at divorce court and all that, all this court TV, and see all these stupid niggers on there, and that they could take out their racism that way. And that's why it's so popular. Because white people love to watch the stupid niggers on divorce court and so forth, which makes them a goddamn hypocrite. They're hypocrites, you see? Now, I openly admit, I watch that stuff once in a while because it's funny as hell, and these dumb niggers get on there and it's something else. It's a riot, and it's racist. It's racist to the core, and I love it. But the average white person will say, oh, no, I watch it for the legalities and so forth and like that. Got nothing to do with racism, lying sack of shit. You know, I forgot to tell you something I've stumbled onto. You may have found it up on YouTube. It's Might is Right, as spoken and read to you like I read to you, only he does a lot better job than me. And in the background, the video is the Viking show, the series on the History Channel, the Viking show with all the battles of the Vikings. So they combine the reading of Might is Right with the video of the Viking show. And so that's something you should go up there and find. It's really I think it's a thrill to listen and watch the action. I have no idea who put it out, but whoever did a great job, and they deserve a lot of respect. What's going on with this Hillary situation? The Clinton saga. From Judicial Watch, State Department finds new records in Clinton FOIA litigation. Judicial Watch announced that the Obama State Department recently found thousands of new records from Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, according to the information provided by Judicial Watch. I wonder if Obama's... I know there was a rift between Obama and the Clintons. I wonder if he's going to put this stuff out as he's going out of office. That'd be funny if he did. She deserves it, and she's a real bitch. She's the Rosa Luxemburg of the Democrat Party. Well, they say these invaders that they call, what do they call, refugees, Iraqis, as the Obama administration welcomes throngs of displaced nationals from terrorist countries, unconventional warfare countries. An Iraqi refugee granted residency after coming to the U.S. as a teenager has been charged with supporting the jihadist group Islamic State. There you go. Of course, like the stupid liberals and conservatives say, well, they're not all that way. Well, they don't have to be all that way, you dumbass. Just a handful of them can blow up buildings and everything else and murder people in their beds. I mean, since when do you have to have a whole bunch of people to kill a bunch of people? Look at the drone situation. One drone wiping out dozens and dozens of people. But that's okay. They got a license to do it. You don't. Like this, U.S. immigrants or invaders, severe weather amnesty for recent floods, always on the prowl for opportunities to grant illegal invaders reprieve, the Obama administration is capitalizing on the recent floods to reward undocumented aliens, illegal aliens in the affected regions with a special severe weather immigration ticket. How about that? And yeah, and still, most of these politicians and Republicans, too, don't want to really do anything about it. Oh, we couldn't deport all these people. There's 35 million people. We couldn't deport them. It's impossible to deport them. Well, I'll tell you what. We deported hundreds of thousands of them before, back in the 50s. And you can do it. You just have to do a few hundred thousand at a time. You can take anybody out of here. They can take us white people and move us out of the country. They just do it a few hundred thousand at a time. And there wouldn't be hardly any resistance either. I don't want to get in trouble. We're law-abiding. This is the land of the law, not the man. That's the biggest bullshit motto I've ever heard. We're a country of laws, not man. Well, who makes the laws, idiot? Of course, this JudicialWatch.com put out some pretty good stuff, but it's all pro-Republican oriented. Oh, yeah, they'll put a little bit about the bad about the Republicans, but you can always tell. The only way you can find out anything bad about the Democrats is read the Republican stuff. Ha! What, do you think we're idiots? Yeah, they do. And most of us are. Singapore, the likelihood of lone wolf attacks is low in Southeast Asia, said a panel of counterterrorism experts yesterday, because would-be terrorists are more likely to be radicalized and subsequently operate within a broader network, in other words, a gang. the idea of lone wolf terror attacks like those in Europe, in the United States and Australia is very rare in this part of the world. Jakarta-based expert on terrorism, Sidney Jones, director of the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict, told Today. Well, that's bullshit, because lone wolves strike all the time in India and Pakistan, places like that. Inciting Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim country, which has seen about 250 of its citizens joining ISIS. Incidentally, ISIS is the proper name, not these other names. ISIS expands and includes Israel. As an example, Ms. Jones said many of the terror organizations, now these are just unconventional warfare organizations, supporters who wanted to join the group would turn to similar groupings for support and advice first. Quote, there are almost no lone wolf attacks in Southeast Asia. That's a lie. That's bullshit, because there's mass murder in Southeast Asia. And in India, it really rises to a tremendous amount of one-on-one murder. See, they don't count that as terrorism. I mean, if people are murdering people all the time in India and Pakistan, but they don't count that as terrorism. And it's partly because Indonesian jihadists are mostly radicalized through the taking part in radical discussion groups called Pengaljan, she said. People who are interested in ISIS on their own look for radical discussion groups before taking it further. Well, that's interesting. Now, we got that information I just read you from Southeast Asia, that there are no lone wolves. And now this is from, I forget the name of this paper, but it's from Kuala Lumpur. Inspector General of Police Tan Sri Khalid Abar Bakar today expressed his concern over the emergence of Islamic State ISIS supporters who operate as lone wolves to create chaos in the country. So he's 180 degrees out with the other people. Commenting on a recent incident where a 16-year-old in ISIS-style garb had brandished a knife in a supermarket in Sungya, Pattaya, Kedah, Kaladia, said the incident proved that the threat posed by ISIS was real. Well, I don't know, one guy dressed in camis with a knife. Quote, we have always been worried about these lone wolves and their activities. They have no qualms about taking matters into their own hands. Well, what hands are they going to take it into if they're by themselves? Just like what happened in the Sungya Pattaya, he said. These people don't make much sense. Khalid said that there were those who accused the police of making up stories about the ISIS threat. This is a reminder that the threat is very real. It's a global issue, and Malaysia is not excluded, he said at a handover ceremony for the executive director and director for police services and Asianopol secretariat here today. On Monday, a 16-year-old self-proclaimed ISIS supporter had walked into a Sungjae Pitani supermarket and brandished a knife at a woman. Are you kidding? That must mean half of the niggers in Chicago belong to ISIS. I mean, compared to what's going on in Chicago, yeah, that's right. They're all with ISIS. I knew it. All the niggers in Chicago are terrorists. All they are terrorists. Yeah. Okay, what do we got here? What am I doing? Let's see here. There we go. All the special meetings and people getting together and all these hot shot, big shots talking about ISIS. Every time you read what they say, they don't know shit. They don't have any of this under control because they can't control it. They can't control lone wolves or anything like that. I mean, you know, especially if the people don't have any regard for their own life and they're suicidal or they're do whatever they do, they know they can't stop them. They're not going to stop ISIS. You know, I have nothing for ISIS, but you're not going to stop ISIS because they can revert to the back in the hills and or wherever they go in caves and operate as unconventional warfare. And that's the way, if it's a real true movement and a real true guerrilla movement, that's what they'll do. You'll never get rid of them if they don't want to quit. The United States, and they're talking about all this stuff about United States being involved over there. And they're not winning, and they're spending all kinds of money, and they're involving all kinds of weaponry. Well, they're not there to win, dummy. They're there to spend money and put massive amounts of weapons and to try out new weapons and all that. That's why they're not winning. They're not prepared to win. They don't want to win. They want to try out their weapons and sell lots of weapons into the Middle East. That's what that's all about. Jeez. Why is it so hard to get that across to people? That's why we've been in all these wars ever since the end of World War II. It has nothing to do with the issue, supposed issue at hand, get the communists or get the capitalists or whatever. It's simply to spend lots of money and build lots of weapons, try them out, find they're faulty, throw them away, get some more. Or sell them to Terrible Tommy's used equipment yard over here. And I like that. Let's go back to Donald Trump. When I turned my microphone around here the right way, I thought it looked like it was low volume. Having been involved in my previous, this is not me writing, I'm reading, in my previous two columns with the love of neighbors. How many people really love their neighbors? I had no chance until now to participate in the great controversy over Donald Trump's Yiddish. Perhaps this is just as well, because now the furor has abated over what exactly Trump said, meant to say, thought he had said, or should be blamed or not blamed for saying when he remarked on December 21st that Hillary Clinton was schlonged in her 2008 primary loss to Barack Obama. It is possible to make a few summarizing observations. The first of these is that Trump was almost certainly not guilty of a deliberate sexual innuendo that he was widely accused of making, although all of his detractors knew that schlong was a slang term originating with American Jews for your dick. They said penis. I'll use the normal verbiage, dick. Few were aware that used as a verb, it had the additional meaning, especially in Trump's native New York City and Jewish neighborhood, of to beat someone soundly in an athletic contest, as pointed out by the foreword Jewish magazine's veteran columnist J.J. Goldberg, hardly a Trump enthusiast. Well, she got schlonged. Schlonged isn't just schlonging plus. I grew up in Long Island in the 50s and 60s, not far from the Trump Queens neighborhood, and around the same time where we live, schlonged was an utterly commonplace term meaning clobbered or thoroughly defeated. It gained particularly currency after the New York Mets set up shop and had nothing to do with male anatomy, at least not in the mind of anyone I knew. Several other born New Yorkers have corroborated this, and I myself, though a decade older than Goldberg and a Giants fan, in what were pre-med days, can remember the word being used this way among my high school friends. We did not, to the best of my memory, use schlong in sense of a penis or dick, for which other words were not lacking. This is hardly to say, of course, that there is no connection between the two meanings. In many languages, for unfortunately obnoxious reasons, words for having sex can also be noted abusing, taking advantage of, or getting the better of someone. Fuck is an excellent example, and indeed there is no more a sexual innuendo in a sentence like, they really fucked us by giving the contact to another company, that there was a Trump schlonged. A word's origin do not necessarily tell us anything about how it is being used in specific situations by contemporary speakers. Well, pardon me, Mr. Jew, I think he did use it in that manner. You may not. Which is why, though it has time and time again been described as such in the media, it makes no sense to refer to schlonged as Yiddish. Not only did East European Yiddish have no such verb as schlangen, it is far from clear that it ever had a word schlong meaning penis. A schlong in Yiddish is a snake. Well, I can see the connection. Not with me, but with some people. As is a schlang in German, and while the word can also denote a nasty or vile person, it does not seem ever to have been a sexual connotation. Wow. Not impossible that unknown to us, there was some regional variety of Yiddish brought by its speakers to the United States in which schlong did mean penis or dick. But it's more likely that the word was first given this meaning by the American-born children of Yiddish-speaking immigrants. Nor is it a mystery why this might have happened, snakes being universally phallic symbols. That's why the doctor's symbol has a snake around it. Did you ever ask your doctor, how come you have a symbol of a penis dick around your doctor's symbol? Whichever was the case, however, to schlong, well, of course we have penis symbols all over the place. They're called the Jefferson Monuments, a dick symbol. All those monuments in that shape are tributes to ancient sex worship. I've got a book on it. Yeah, I know all this shit, man. Whichever was the case, however, to schlong in the verbal sense of to cream or to shellac must be considered an English word with a Yiddish derivation, much as to say to shellac is an English word with a French and ultimately part Sanskrit derivation. It goes back to the shell lac, a translation of French lac en écailles, lac, being traceable to Sanskrit laxa, or red dye. Well, I screwed up again and pressed the wrong button, but we're going to finish this out. This is also why poking fun or taking offense at Trump's allegedly faulty Yiddish, another widespread reaction to his use of schlonged, was absurd. He was not being, as Justin William Moyer wrote in the Washington Post, a Gentile who linguistically may have wandered too far from home. Neither was he, as the renowned Harvard cognitive scientist Steven Pinker suggested, one of many goyim who are confused by the large number of Yiddish terms beginning with shla or shn. And while Miriam Isaacs, a Yiddish language professor, certainly had the right to think that everything Trump says is disgusting and intends it to be disgusting, her remark that so often Yiddish is the butt of jokes or silly words, I have little patience with that anymore, as much as it can be sympathized with has no application to Trump schlonged. Trump did not think he was using Yiddish, much less making a joke of it. He thought he was speaking English, and he was. No, you're not getting out of that easy, kike. You know why he used it? Because he was raised among the Jews over there in Brooklyn and so forth, and they used that all the time, and he probably made a mistake because of his habit of using it. They're trying to get him out of the woodshed. Indeed, wait a minute. Well, I'm going to quit there because it just goes on and on and on arguing about their dicks. You don't want to hear a whole show on dicks, do you? No. Or schlongs. I wouldn't be surprised if Hillary's got one, I'll tell you that. And if she's got one, it's probably a humongous one. Well, you know you can dig a lot of stuff out of the Jews' material. They let it all hang out. The original anti-Semitic intellectual, the first century Alexandrian scholar and rhetorician Appian, may be known today not for his commentaries on Homer, all of which were lost, but for his slanderous writings on the Jews. Appian's attacks on the Jews presaged charges of ritual murder leveled against Jews in medieval Christendom. While none of his writings are extant, we know of Appian's anti-Semitism from the great ancient Jewish historian Josephus. In Against Appian, written by Josephus decades after Appian's death, the Jewish historian defends Judaism against the attacks of Appian and his sometimes co-author Sherman. Okay. The lies leveled at Jews in their work include deriving the word Sabbath from an ancient Egyptian word for a disease of the groin and claiming that Jews worshipped an ass's head in the Jerusalem temple. The worst libel to come from Appian, however, was the accusation that Jews would kidnap a Greek child, fatten him up, sacrifice him, and ritually consume him in Jerusalem. This charge would come back to haunt the Jews 1,000 years later, and variations persist even to this day. So, that was way back they were on the Jews' ass. I wonder why. They're all such nice guys. I mean, be no reason to attack Jews. Well, that's about it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And remember, I have nothing to say. 5 words. If you don't stick to that, they're going to haul you away to the hooskow. If you don't talk, you'll probably walk.
Advertising lullaby. Quality, value, style, service, selection, convenience, economy, savings, performance, experience, hospitality, low rates, friendly service, name brands, easy terms, affordable prices, money back guarantee. Free installation, free admission, free appraisal, free alterations, free delivery, free estimates, free home trial, and free parking. No cash, no problem, no kidding, no fuss, no muss, no risk, no obligation, no red tape, no down payment, no entry fee, no hidden charges, no purchase necessary, no one will call on you, no payments or interest till September. Limited time only, though, so act now, order today, send no money, offer good while supplies last. 2 to a customer, each item sold separately, batteries not included, mileage may vary, all sales are final, allow 6 weeks for delivery, some items not available, some assembly required, some restrictions may apply. So come on in for a free demonstration and a free consultation with our friendly professional staff. Our experienced and knowledgeable sales representatives will help you make a selection that's just right for you and just right for your budget. And say, don't forget to pick up your free gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high-quality premium select gourmet pocket pencil sharpener. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. And if you act now, we'll include an extra added free complimentary bonus gift at no cost to you. A classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet combination key ring, magnifying glass, and garden hose in a genuine imitation leather style carrying case with authentic vinyl trim. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. Actually, it's our way of saying, bend over just a little bit farther so we can stick this big advertising dick up your ass a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper, you miserable, no-good, dumbass fucking consumer.